Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 322 of the Roguecast, recorded February 23rd, 2021.
Growl on. So, we are coming to you live from our studio, which is in the nice warm 70s.
Yeah, we we made it through, but I know that this was a tough last week or two for people.
Yeah, like, we hope that everyone who is listening is doing okay and has water, power.
It was certainly a trying experience, and I know that they are only, as we do that, type this or speak this, it's only now kind of wrapping up boil water notices. Yep. I think most people have power back, but... Yeah, it was scary.
Yeah,
y'all got it hard worse than I did.
Yeah, I was out of power for 3 days.
Yep.
Really, just like I think the longest stretch I was at 13 hours. Yeah. But
we also, of course, the store was closed for a week, which has not happened since the early days of the pandemic. So that's great, and we are still waiting on comics to arrive. So that's probably the first bit of news to get to, which is that we have our DC comics. Most of them, this week's DC comics, as we record this, have not arrived. By the time you hear it. Should be here.
Right.
And hopefully by the time you listen to this, which usually comes out on Wednesday.
Yes, well...
It depends, but hopefully we will have Diamond Comics.
Yeah. As we record this, which is on Tuesday afternoon, usually this is when we would have our comics. Currently we have no idea. Diamond says they got picked up yesterday, but that is all we have. UPS has not scanned them. So we are just waiting to find out. We basically are going to have two weeks worth of comics, and it was big weeks.
It's never happened before.
No, this has never happened before. There was 1 week we got comics a year or two ago. We got comics on a Monday the week after, which is the latest it had ever been in 15 or 20 years of retailing. This now is the weirdest thing we've ever had.
So hopefully we'll have comics tomorrow.
Yep.
It's going to take us a little while to pull them all.
Yeah, so if you come in early on Wednesday... We will probably still be pulling comics.
Yes.
Yeah. Also, we won't have the room to sort of spread the variants out, so you'll need to dig for your variant covers a little bit.
Bear with us.
Also, if you are in a place where you have some money after all this, because a lot of people are dealing with house issues and a week of lost income and that kind of thing, but if you're in the place to help out, we did basically lose a week of sales, and it would be great. Come in and pick something up off the inventory sale. It'll be super helpful to us.
Yeah. There's a lot of good stuff still back there.
There is.
Some great board games.
I suggest buying two copies of Gloomhaven.
Or do what Dave
suggests.
Play one, suggest.
Then immediately play another.
That's a great idea. We only have one copy in store, but sure.
I saw two yesterday.
Oh, did you?
Yep.
Okay. So buy both our Gloomhavens, I guess.
Yes. Also good if you just want to lift some weights.
Yeah, that's true. Or defend your house from a prowler.
Yes.
The Prowler or a Prowler?
A Prowler.
Okay.
Not the Prowler is an okay guy.
Yeah, he's all right.
Let's see. There's
in the Spider-Verse universe, he was less of an okay guy.
Yeah, he was going to kill Miles till he found out it was Miles.
Yeah, then he came around, right?
Yeah, and then he got killed.
Yeah, well, I guess that's
true. Come around, he gets killed.
But 616 Prowler is a good guy. He ended up working for Peter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hobie Brown.
Yeah.
Yeah. Prowl on.
The other bit of very important store news, we missed it because of the ice storm, but our listener, Russell Sinclair, had a birthday last week.
Yay, Russell.
Happy birthday, Russell.
Yeah, as Russell is, as we all know, our only listener.
That's true. We went ahead and did a poll one time. That was it.
That was it.
He was the only one who ever responded.
It's Russell and Rob. That's it. Those are the two people who listen.
I went door to door and...
in the ice apocalypse?
Yes. and I only went to one place, actually, because of the ice apocalypse. We did a little quick census. I was like, are you Russell Sinclair? He said yes, and that was it.
I mean, that seems legit.
Pretty good confirmation.
I thought, Dave, maybe you were, since it was the ice apocalypse, you like went next door in your apartment, and you were like, are you Russell Sinclair? No. Do you listen to our podcast? No. Therefore, Russell Sinclair listens to the podcast.
Yeah, that's a weird proof.
Sort of proved a negative.
Yeah.
All right, we do have some news to talk about. We don't have any comics to talk about this week, so it's going to be news and topics.
Yeah, but there's some neat stuff. There's some trailers and some other goodies out there.
We've got a lot to talk about.
So one of the things I wanted to mention was that this just got announced today, and of course people are already calling about it. You guys see this Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft? It's the next D&D book.
Is this in the style of all the previous, you know, Guide to Volo's Guide and
so
all that?
So this is the interesting thing. So this is going to be, it's sort of a sequel to Curse of Strahd.
Right.
But apparently the book is going to riff on zombie apocalypse, slasher horror, Frankenstein, cosmic terrors, urban legends, battle royales. Basically, it's going to be a book of horror in the D&D universe.
That's interesting. But will it also contain like an adventure, or is it more of like
It sounds like it's gonna focus on the domains of dread, which is what Ravenloft was.
Yep.
So it'll be 30 new domains of dread that'll be different versions of horror. And it sounds like it's presented as correspondence between vampire hunter Rudolf von Richten.
Yep.
And other heroes in the Ravenloft setting.
Okay.
It's a cool framing device.
So yeah. It sounds like basically they're saying it's a mix of like Eberron and Tasha's Cauldron.
That sounds like the kind of thing that even though I don't really regularly play D&D ever anymore, it's the kind of thing I might pick up to see how they handle it.
There is a 20-page adventure called The House of Lament that weaves together many different domains, like a whirlwind tour of horror.
Okay,
interesting.
I'm interested in this, and it's got to have subclasses and all that kind of stuff. So it sounds like it'll be a pretty notable book. I have to say that. I like Ravenloft. It's a good setting. But I am a little disappointed that they are doing a sequel book instead of a new book. Like, we haven't had Spelljammer since, like, second edition, I don't think. And they haven't...
Grandpa talking about his different settings.
Well, they haven't done Planescape. They haven't done Dark Sun for 5th edition.
It is a weird holdout on all of these different settings.
Yeah. Well, they did Dark Sun for 4th edition, and I don't think it went over super well.
But people liked it. Like, it sold. It was just 4th edition of Tale of 4th.
Well, here's the other thing, is if they started putting those out, like, with sort of a nice trade dress that denoted the different worlds,
yeah.
You know, cool covers and stuff, people would get back into these things. Yeah. Like, clearly D&D is doing well right now. But yes, it is a little weird to return to the well on Ravenloft again when they have all of these untapped worlds.
The other thing I don't understand, and I guess I do understand that it's a risk, why have they not created a new game world in a while?
Yeah.
Like, they have ceded that market to all the third-party publishers.
Eberron was 3rd edition?
Eberron was originally? Was 3.5, yeah.
Long time ago, like 15 years ago, like, 20 years ago.
I don't think there was a new world in 4th edition. Like,
they did.
They revamped all the characters. Remember, it was sort of a new world because they revamped all the halflings. Remember the river halflings and all that stuff?
Sure, sure. Like, and then they formally brought in Dragonborn and Tieflings as player characters.
Is this the first time they've gone back to Ravenloft, though?
Yeah, Curse of Strahd was the... And then they did the new Curse of Strahd for Christmas this year.
Yeah, but that was like a repackaging of the original book.
That is an adventure, and this is a source book. So I get it. It's not the craziest thing in the world. But I guess I'm just kind of surprised. I guess I feel like somebody at WotC must be a big Ravenloft fan.
The same one that's probably a big Azamar fan. Who does all the minis.
You know, what if they made one that was like a world of shambling mounds?
Yeah.
Just a thought.
How about a
swamp world?
Everybody plays an owlbear.
Everybody is just a big puffy, huggy, feathered bear.
I'm intrigued by this book and the write up. Which the write up I'm reading is at a site called Inverse.com, which had a pretty good write up on sort of what the basics of it are, and it definitely has me interested. I'll be getting, if nothing else, for the nice alternate cover, which looks cool again. But yeah, I'm a little weird.
Would you like
to
file a formal protest that you didn't get Planescape?
I would just like it noted for the record that it's weird that they haven't gone back and done Spelljammer. Everybody wants Spelljammer.
You know what's weird is that there will come a time when 5th edition will wrap and they'll do some 6th edition. I think it's going to be a ways out because 5th edition is still growing strong.
Super successful.
Like, it could be 5 or 10 years. But before then, I imagine they will want to get to these worlds. But the longer you wait, the weirder it is to suddenly start doing world books.
Yeah. I'm just saying, Russell, you want Spelljammer, right?
If you're Russell Sinclair, send us an email marked Y or N Spelljammer in the subject line.
If you're not Russell Sinclair, you can also send us that.
Fair enough.
Pedro Pascal, who is doing quite well for himself, he is... Unlike Gina Carano, going to be on season 3 of The Mandalorian.
It's true.
He has been cast to play Joel in the Last of Us film.
That's right. I forgot about that.
So I have never played a Last of Us game. Is that the lead character?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's post-apocalyptic. There's like a big plant apocalypse. And
yeah,
there are plant zombies.
Plant zombies.
And fungus zombies.
It starts in Austin, which is
it
weird.
It does. Yeah.
Kind of a... Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Sort of survivalist-y?
Yeah, I remember playing at the beginning of the first one, and Kayla was like, nope, walked out.
like, because it's scary? Because
it's scary, and it was in Austin, and it was like, it does a really good job of like being creepy in
It's one of those very overgrown worlds, right? With like, everything's like, you know, greenery growing up on buildings and stuff.
It's a beautiful game.
Yeah, it is a beautiful game. And the zombies have like this rattling thing they do. Yeah. They're creepy.
Yeah. Pascal's doing all right for himself.
Yeah. He'll be good in that role.
Joel, His career is good, but it could be better.
Joel, by the way, it's interesting because the opening of Last of Us, this is a spoiler for a, 15-year-old game.
Yeah.
It starts with him, his daughter dies in the outbreak, basically. Yep. And then he, like, adopts this other girl who is, like, the lead character.
Uh-huh.
And so he is, like, protective dad who is bitter because he lost his child.
Yes.
I think he'll be great for this role.
He will.
Yeah, he seems to be good at dropping those emotional beats in the characters, and also he can play stoic if that character is stoic at times.
By the way, another shot at can we make a good video game movie, which brings us to the Mortal Kombat trailer.
There's somebody backing up just a second. There's somebody really good doing the Last of Us TV series.
Is there TV series?
I thought it was film. Is it a film?
Yeah.
I could have sworn it was TV, was it not?
I don't know.
Pedro Pascal can't do two TV shows.
Yeah, there's no way.
I mean, he could if he...
Well, let's see. The film... Oh, yeah, you're right. It's a television series on HBO.
It's HBO.
Yeah.
And somebody's attached to it that's
written
really good.
Written by Neil Druckmann.
Is Din Djarin the Mandalorian going to die?
Sam Raimi's producing. Neil Druckmann is writing, and he is a guy who has done something. I don't know. Oh, he's the guy who wrote Uncharted and wrote The Last of Us video game.
Oh, so it's the actual game who did the... Yep. That's good.
I mean, maybe. I like those games, but there is definitely a different art to just stringing along a story for video game sequences than having a three-act story structure.
This is why it's Craig Mazin is developing it, who did the Chernobyl.
Oh, that's pretty notable.
Yeah.
Again, it's a little bit about horrible post-apocalypse stuff.
Yeah. Chernobyl.
It's very Chernobyl. but yes, okay, forward back to Mortal Kombat.
So we are all agreed that Mortal Kombat is the best video game movie, right?
Yes.
Although has Rampage surpassed it?
No, because I don't know.
I think it has higher rewatchability. It has funner characters and stuff like that.
Rampage does have Flying Wolf, though. That is
Randy, have you seen Rampage?
I have.
Oh, okay. Did you like it?
Yes, although I put Mortal Kombat above it.
Okay. I think I would, too.
Yeah, I mean, I probably would. I can't.
It's just, like, got a kind of a cooler premise.
And Mortal Kombat is damning with faint praise. It is not a great movie by any means.
Right.
No, but it's, like, the pinnacle of, like, popcorn films.
It's a good 90s action movie.
Right. It's a good kind of cheese. And the new version looks less cheesy, but very cool.
Yeah, so the trailer for the new one dropped, and...
It's R-rated.
It looks really fantastic.
They're embracing the fatalities.
Let me just quick ask this, because I believe, historically, it is... and I know this has probably changed with different video games, but Jax, loses his arms, not... Is it to Sub-Zero?
Yeah. In this, yes.
Well, he does in this, but has that always been the case?
I had to look it up, and I actually didn't read the article too much, but apparently he has lost his arms three different ways.
Man, poor Jax.
He's been around a while, but, you know, that is his constant thing. He's got to have robot arms.
Yeah, he has to have robot arms.
How he gets there is the writer's choice.
One of my favorite things, I think you posted the meme that was the... It's one of those memes, and it's like, I took that personally. I don't know what that... But it's like, isn't it like from Last Dance or something? I don't know where that's from.
I don't know what the source is, but yeah, it's like
the top one is like Jax has arms, and then it shows Sub-Zero, and I took that personally.
Yes. And by the way, that opening sequence looks cool on multiple levels. Yeah. One, you know, it just has like kind of A-list looking production values, a very cool looking Sub-Zero. But yeah, Jax like looks like he starts to fire his like assault rifle right in his face. And Sub-Zero's grabbing the barrel. He freezes the gun, freezes the bullet as it's coming out so that it, like, it's all kind of in a slow-mo sort of thing.
Yep.
And then freezes his arms and shatters them off.
Yep. Yep.
And it's one of those things where you're like, that's fucking cool.
By the way, they got there. Sonya is cool, too. She's, like, doing the special ops thing like she did in the first one. Like,
yep, which was a good idea.
But I think she's more of a lead this time.
It seems so. I can't quite tell everything about how this one is coming together. It has a little bit, you know... part of the thing I liked about the original one was a little bit of that campy fantasy thing, and this is less of that, but there's still elements. There's still, this legend of this tournament, and, I don't think they said the word outworld in there, but that's probably part of it. And you see the heroes gathering to go to the tournament. Nick, you did point out that Kano is among them. Kano, historically one of the big bads.
Yes.
Like the main henchman in a lot of ways is Kano. And by the way, he always looks like he's living it up.
Yeah, he does.
With his crazy Aussie accent.
And he has a laser eye this time.
He has a laser eye. I think he sometimes has had that before.
He's always had it in the video games. They just decided not to use it in the movie.
Right.
He just had a cyborg eye.
And there are like, this is one of those trailers that right out of the gate had like R-rated stuff in it. There's lots of fatalities in it. And cool uses of special effects. What looks like there's going to be some spectacular fight scenes.
It's a good trailer. And the trick is, you can never tell if a good trailer is going to materialize into a good movie.
And I just want to bring up a few points that could counterbalance the good trailer.
All right, let's hear it.
So, the screenplay has 5 writers.
Well, that's never a good sign.
No. None of them, I'm like, eh. Now, in the plus column, the director has only done 1 short.
Okay.
This is his first movie. That may not be a plus. But
he is the one who did the Mortal Kombat shorts a few years ago, is he?
I don't think he is.
Because that has some good stuff in it.
But like John Watts, he only had 1 movie, and then he's doing all the Spider-Man movies, all that. Yep, and he's doing FF.
True.
So, I mean, that's a possibility.
Yep.
But the 5 writers is scary.
Yep.
It is produced by James Wan. And I don't know. I think Mortal Kombat is
the kind of movie that could potentially survive a slightly just okay script if it's got some style and the actors get to kind of choose some scenery. I think I want it to succeed because that trailer was so fun.
Yep.
I will be rooting for it.
I just want them to have a lot of Scorpion and a lot of Sub-Zero, since those are the characters I actually care about.
It does like that. That's heavily what they're going to do, yeah.
Especially Sub-Zero. Sub-Zero is always a favorite of mine.
Is Sub-Zero traditionally what you would call a bad guy?
I think he's fluctuated back and forth. I think in like Mortal Kombat,
back in the 90s, they straight up did a Sub-Zero video game, and there was like a side scroller. I assume that he would become an anti-hero at that point, just like Venom and everybody else in the 90s.
I think somewhere in like Mortal Kombat 3, where he changed his look, he became like a good guy.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I also want somewhere in here where you're having to test your might and like cutting through boards or ice things.
That'd be great.
It'd be a lot of fun. Apparently, we are getting Goro. So
Goro looks, the special effects on him look great.
They've improved a little bit since the 90s.
I like the 90s.
I actually think they did quite a good job with what they had.
For what they had, it was. But he looks fake. It's really bad.
It is not really bad, sir.
It's really bad.
Also, I think it actually looks quite good.
Negative column. There's no Johnny Cage. Johnny Cage is awesome.
Right. But Nick, you already told me there's some theory. So there's a new lead character who the events are revolving around, named Cole, which is the most generic action hero name ever.
I was going to say, let's have a moratorium on white dudes named Cole. Now, we know this dude's half Asian.
Yes. But, and by the way,
still, moratorium on Coles.
My friends who watch more martial arts movies have said like 3 or 4 of the martial artists in this are awesome artists, including him.
Yep.
But I think several of the other guys... Jason Dural, he's like, this actor is in it and this actor is in it, and they are both names I did not know, but he's like, I'll watch it for them.
Yeah.
So they
apparently this
I think they're people who are like on Into the Badlands and
Into the Badlands. He was also in Deadpool 2. He was also in Iron Fist, the TV series.
Yeah, I did want to mention that. It seems like our friends who watch a lot of more fighting movies, we're definitely saying like this cast is full of people who know how to fight. And that's kind of important.
Yeah, so again, this may, what you want a script that has some punch and some cleverness to it.
But mostly you want punches.
But yes, they can the sheer physical action can be what buoys it.
Yeah. You want a script as a punch, but also you want a script as a punch as a kicks.
Yes.
speaking of ultraviolence, we also watched the new trailer for Invincible.
Yes.
Which it is not shying away from its source material.
They're going full on, like, blowing up bodies. Yeah. And,
you know what's funny is the trailer actually kind of matches the arc of, like, maybe, say, the first, what would be the first trade paperback, in the sense that it starts out looking like it's, you know, almost like a Peter Parker-y, Superman-y kind of story about a, or even like Sky High. It's like a kid who, I haven't got my powers yet. That was the premise of Sky High as well. Yeah. And, and then there's things start to happen, and you start to see some more fights. And by the end of the trailer, as by the end of the trade paperback of the first one, people are flying through each other, and blood
bodies
and guts
exploding.
Are spraying everywhere. So this is going to be a... it's still, for me, still to this day, to like 20 years after the series started, a weird mix.
Yeah.
It is a weird mix.
Because, like, the characters don't, like... I don't think they really, like, swear a whole lot. Like... It's weirdly PG-13 as far as, like, some of the language and stuff goes.
Yeah,
and NC-17.
And the look. And NC-17 when they start throwing punches.
Let's talk about the cast, though, because I feel like
the
cast
is amazing.
This went all out. So Invincible is Steven Yeun, who is having a banner year. He's about to be...
Double-check, that's Glenn?
Yeah,
that right?
Glenn from Walking Dead, but he's about to be... there's a movie premiering, I think, next week, or maybe Friday, called Minari.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be amazing. It's drama. He plays, like, a Asian coming to America and sort of a family drama. It's supposed to be great.
Huh.
That's good for him. I'm glad to hear he's kind of breaking out.
J.K. Simmons is the dad, or Omni-Man.
Yeah.
Right?
Seth Rogen is playing Alan the Alien.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
Jason Mantzoukas is Rexplode.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Gillian Jacobs is Samantha Eve.
Oh, interesting.
Sandra Oh, from Killing Eve, is playing the mom.
Okay, that makes sense.
Walton Goggins is Cecil Stedman, which I think is...
That's their Nick Fury.
Yeah, their Nick Fury.
He's an old dude. That's weird to have a Walton Goggins voicing him. By the way, was his mom Asian? Looks good.
Yeah.
And I also...
I think the animation looks even, like, better than good. It looks, like, great.
And one of the things I also thought... One of the tricks with Invincible is... And this, we've known this for years.
Yeah.
It's really hard to pitch. Because you can't give away the twist.
Right.
But
and
the twist is what the movie's about.
Right.
The trailer did a really good job with it,
they
though.
They did. They never even hinted the twist.
Well, they
well,
do.
They do. If you know, then you know. Like, when the dad is like, we gotta talk... Like, we all know what that scene is. But if you don't, if you've never seen Invincible, it doesn't even hint or give away. Yeah.
Also, by the way, Invincible, like, if you look at the... How many issues did it run?
It ran 20 volumes? No.
Yeah. I mean...
20...
Yeah. Which arguably means that the twist essentially occurs in chapter one.
Yeah.
Like, so it is and, you know, and from then on, it's just a series of dramas. I'm sure there's more twists to come.
Sure, yeah.
So here's the big question. Who's watching it?
I'll probably watch it.
Yeah, I'll watch it.
I won't watch it.
I'm watching, and I find to be one of the best shows.
I know that you loved his Walking Dead series.
No, I hate Walking Dead, but I watch
The Boys.
I watch Garth Ennis's The Boys, and I despise that comic, and I love the show.
But I feel like this is in the same vein as The Boys. It's going to do the same thing where it's going to be like, it's not what I want from superheroes in general, but I'm fine with it as a one-off.
Yeah.
I think it will perpetually weird me out that it, like, kind of is, like, has some, like, Silver Age, Bronze Age superhero style, but with blood and guts. To me, it's just the weirdest mix, and I just don't, like, have an interest in it.
You can definitely tell Kirkman's 90s roots.
It actually makes a lot more sense to me on The Boys, where you it's all supposed to be kind of adult and, you know,
I enjoyed Invincible. I bought it for the first, like, 10 volumes. I think I just reached a point of kind of, I got, like... bogged down in the violence. It was almost too much.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're... Since the show's probably not going to run 20 seasons, they're going to kind of clip it and cut it down a little bit.
I actually
bit.
Think it'll wind so, up being that I'll wind up liking it better.
I think so,
that,
too.
Yeah. So, let's go. Let's talk about another 90s throwback. Spawn's Shared Universe.
Now, this is not like an animated project or a movie. This is back to comics now.
Back to comics.
Where Spawn, the chain-wearing, deal-with-the-devil, big cloak, medalist-looking superhero of them all. And I will say, one of the rare African-American superheroes.
Yeah.
Which is pretty notable.
Except for that time he used his magic and he became white.
He was... That was part of... the devil's punishment of him is he whitened him.
Wasn't that issue one?
It was like issue one or two. It was McFarlane's great writing. He wanted to address racial issues sensitively, so he had a black man reborn as a white man and angsting about it.
Yep.
He's like, I'm like a surf bum, dude. No.
Like that first issue also had Chapel, didn't it, from Youngblood?
That was a reveal that they held out for a little while.
Yeah, okay.
Because he kept on having dreams of a church, only he would realize later, it's not a church, it's a chapel.
McFarlane really is the great dialogue guy, isn't he?
He is.
So good.
Now, speaking of...
He can rise above it all.
We are... Just to preface this, we are getting the Spawn Compendium, I believe, sometime this week.
Yeah, it is this week. It's going to be...
It's the first eight volumes. It's like the big...
It's a big...
Same as they do with Invincible and Walking Dead and all that.
Yep. So if you want to read a lot of Chains...
Yes. See the chapel that we're speaking of.
They should
of.
Say, rattle the chains.
I'm sure somewhere in there he does.
Now, for those who we all followed it back in the 90s, right?
Yep.
We're all dumb kids.
Yep. I followed it for 20 issues.
Yep, same. I think I had this for a while. Yep.
And I think I wanted to go back every once in a while because I would see some cool new character, probably because the toys were also pretty cool.
Yep. Yeah, the toys were good.
Even in that time, I will say this, there were some spinoffs. The Violator, his clowny Satan devil man, had a comic.
Not a great name, by the way, the Violator.
Angela, who would later, through a lawsuit, go to Marvel.
Yep, and become Thor's sister.
Yeah.
Which I loved.
There was her, I can't remember who all else, they've done different time period spawns, which really came out of the toys.
And then there was, like the divine thing, the Redeemer.
The Redeemer, right? the good spawn, or whatever.
But there were Viking Spawn and all this that were toys and would sometimes get a miniseries, Dark Age Spawn, right?
He just recently introduced Gunslinger Spawn and She Spawn.
So imagine if all those characters were part of, they already were part of a shared universe, but I guess he's like making the push.
But now it's a Spawnverse.
How many comics are coming out?
So he's going to do four books, not all ongoing, but he's doing a one-shot called Spawn's Universe.
Yep.
And then he's going to do a series called King Spawn, Gunslinger Spawn, and a team book called The Scorched.
Unless there's one called Enter the Violator, I don't know why I'm even here.
I don't know why you're here either.
I feel like when you pick them up, Ozzy Osbourne should start wailing straight out of the...
Not Alice in Chains?
honestly, that'd be pretty appropriate.
He does have a list of contributors. Donnie Cates is in there somewhere.
Yep. By the way, who prefaced his crossover miniseries with a quote from McFarlane, which was the Kids Love Chains.
Kids Love Chains.
I would not be shocked if Spawn shows up in crossover.
I wouldn't be either.
But also, Art Adams, Jason Sean Alexander, Brett Booth, J. Scott Campbell, Greg Capullo, Jim Chung, David Finch. Who else is in here? Sean Murphy. Frank Quitely.
It's a combination of artists I don't like and artists I do like.
Yep. Yeah, or artists that I didn't used to like but have gotten like super good, like David Finch.
Yeah.
I actually think he's definitely improved.
Now here's the question. This isn't even really a question. I believe that none of us are particularly enthused for this.
No.
It sounds like the 90th thing ever, just as filtered through the modern. The MCU's shared universe success.
I don't think I've read a Spawn book since issue 20.
You know what's funny? You know how when they left Marvel, they were all very much like, we're gonna do it right, we're gonna do it our way.
Chart our own path.
I kind of want to to be mean. Kevin Feige or one of those guys to be like, come crawling back to our ideas, I see. You just couldn't make it on your own, and you needed to steal our stuff again.
I'm lying. I did read Sam and Twitch. Does that count?
I read Sam and Twitch. Bendis writing.
I'm sorry to say it counts.
Okay.
Those are other characters that would be, again, it has existed as a shared universe before. This is just like a more formal declaration of it, right?
Yeah.
And they're all kind of hitting it once.
Yep.
I would say to this, to people who like those artists, who like Chains.
If you like Chains.
If you've ever felt broody and angsty.
Yeah.
If you like superheroes who commit ultraviolence.
Can I be very on the nose and just say if you like Spawn?
I guess.
If you like Spawn, but wish he was a gunslinger or a king. Or a woman.
All in the same room. Fighting... I guess Violator?
He's probably fighting the devil or his own angst, I don't know.
I hope Shackle's
they're all
back.
Together fighting their own angst, yes. Which would be amazing.
Anyway, I think that the first one should come with like a plastic chain you can rattle around while you're reading it.
How did we never have that in the 90s?
Yeah, it should come with a cassette tape you know, of curated metal songs from McFarlane.
It's Polybag with a link of chain.
Wasn't Spawn in the last Mortal Kombat game? I think he
yeah.
was.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, they actually should put out a Spotify playlist of whatever McFarlane listens to.
It should be in the back matter.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a thing that exists that we are going to hide from when it appears. But you please enjoy it. We will not judge. We will just not read.
And then one last throwback thing. DC is going to publish a comic book from Superman 78 and Batman 89 that will continue those universes, basically.
Yeah, like this kind of kicked off when they did the Batman 66 comic, yeah. right? So, which was a pretty successful thing that they did for several years.
Yeah, at the time, Batman 89 was pitched by artist Joe Quinones, who was attached to this. And I forget who the writer was, but...
I thought there was a lady who was associated with it, and I can't say her name.
Was it Marguerite Bennett?
Maybe.
I don't know. But I know, I'm pretty sure that, because the artist I just named...
Joe Quinones
was here.
Yeah,
we had him out for Howard the Duck.
Yeah,
he drew me an Aquaman sketch.
And he drew you an Aquaman, and I remember him talking about the Batman 89 and being like, "Yeah, I wish they'd done that." So they are doing it, but I am pretty sure Sam Hamm was not the original writer. Sam Hamm is the guy who wrote the movies, and he also wrote a comic called Blind Justice, like when he was hot off the movie. And he's not a great comic writer. Yeah. I feel like. I want someone who loved and appreciated, but also recognized that Batman 89 has some cheese to it.
Right. We were talking about this. Is like the script. I bet if you just read Sam Hamm's script, it's devoid of a lot of the kind of catchy, campy lines.
No.
Maybe not. But like it's stuff like get this guy a grant. He stole my balloons and all that stuff.
Yep.
Like I don't know if that's in there. Also, just like Jack Nicholson hammed it up. He probably I know he improvised a lot of that stuff. And I feel like, and then it went through the Tim Burton filter. Tim Burton's a super weirdo, but that's part of the charm of Batman 89. And I would want it to feel like the movie as completed, not the script to the movie.
Yeah.
So that's why I would worry a little bit about Sam Hamm on it. But I mean, if nothing else, it shows some thought went into it, you know.
So it says they're going to do the return of Selina Kyle Catwoman.
Okay.
Will debut a new Robin, so they're obviously the Schumacher stuff is not...
Right. Basically, it was if Batman and Batman Returns are the only two
lead-ins. Plus, Quinones has a vision for Harvey Dent Two-Face that is as close to movie magic as a comic can get. I don't know what that means.
Well,
they're going to continue the...
No,
that means like, that Billy Dee Williams...
Billy Dee Williams
that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. That sounds right.
The thing is, I would have loved to have seen two more movies in that universe that are basically Tim Burton's version. I'm not sure if these guys are going to be able to bring Tim Burton's vision to life.
Yeah.
We'll see.
It sounds like, but at the very least, that's a creative team with some possibilities, and I know the art will look good.
So, as much as I like Superman 78, I don't know that Superman needed a continuation.
You know, they ended up doing, what, four movies all the way up through Quest for Peace.
Quest for Peace.
And, you know, each one was diminishing returns. They had less and less of a budget. The movies lost their, like the original one was, like, written by Mario Puzo of The Godfather.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all going to be a down.
Which one wrote the Richard Pryor one?
I don't know, Richard Pryor.
And don't get me wrong, I love Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
Sure.
But I was by the way, Superman. Fascinated with that movie as a kid. I watched it endlessly. But by the end, we had Nuclear Man and John Cryer, Lex Luthor's nephew.
Yep.
I wonder, by the way, they could... You know, in it...
I forgot that John Cryer played Lex Luthor's nephew.
Yeah.
Because he's playing Luthor in Super... I never put that together.
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
Oh, that's great. The screenplay, by the way, David Newman and Leslie Newman, the creative team of Superman 3. Also, the people who did, you got to be kidding me, Bonnie and Clyde.
Wow.
And they're credited on Superman and Superman 2.
Okay. Yeah, so, I did know it wasn't all Mario Puzo.
They also then did Sheena, Santa Claus the Movie, Michael Jackson's Moonwalker.
I watched Moonwalker a lot.
What an odd combination
and
of
the
things.
Weird movie Takedown?
I don't remember that.
I don't know.
That sounds like another version of Payback. And
I don't know what that is. It's a Skeet Ulrich movie.
Okay.
Skeet Ulrich, Tom Berenger, 2000.
Wow.
I bet it's great.
That's not great.
Anyway, So I actually think, like, the Superman movies, because they introduced, like, almost no villains other than Luthor and the iconic Phantom Zone villains. They are very iconic there.
Yeah.
That there's lots of room to play around with. You know, it's a Superman who we've got a strong sense of, a Lois Lane we have a good sense of, and a Perry White we have, a good sense of. Like, I think done right, that could actually be a lot of fun.
Is there a creative team for
this? This is written by Rob Venditti, who unfortunately is hit or miss.
Yeah.
Art by Wilfredo Torres, who's actually really good. Yeah. Jupiter's Legacy, I think.
Yes, actually, yeah.
It's another one. Curious. These are digital first, so they won't come to us until a while, and I don't know if they'll even do single issues, or they're just going to do... This looks like maybe... Okay, so they're going to do 12 chapters digitally, then 6 printed comics, then hardcover collections.
Okay.
So the same model that they did for Batman 66.
And Injustice.
Basically, like Batman 89, I think I have a little bit more vested interest in the weirdness of Batman 89 than... Yeah. Even though I love Superman 78,
I had that comic adaptation of the 89 movie.
I had that and Batman Returns. And Jerry Ordway drew them. It was like one of the first times I'd seen somebody really drawing superheroes, like whether you could see the thickness of the armor, because he was doing it based on the actual art and stuff, or the photos.
Yeah. The last bits of news I have are all DC... Well, not there's two more DC-related, actually.
Okay.
One is that John Wesley Shipp is going to guest star as the Golden Age Flash on Stargirl.
That is to say, 90s cool. Flash guy as Golden Age Flash?
But he played Golden Age Flash in The Flash Show.
And he played Earth 2.
after they killed him off as Barry's dad.
Right.
They brought him in to play Jay Garrick.
So he's showing up on...
Stargirl.
Now, is he playing the same character? Stargirl's in the setting, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
but Stargirl is not set in the Arrowverse, as far as we know.
Oh, interesting. So this is more of a thematic thing.
Yeah,
unless it's like Earth 5 or whatever.
It could be.
That's cool, though. You know, one thing I kind of got to give it up for DC, as far as basically they do this with their TV and their animation stuff, is that they seem to try to uplift the actors, you know, sometimes including people who might not be getting a ton of work, who came from previous iterations that were like... would have been typecast and lost. Like, what's her name? Who from Superman 3, who played Lana, ended up playing Superman's mom in Smallville for its whole run.
That's true.
And there's lots of little cases like that, and it's pretty cool. I mean, that they do that.
You know, Annette O'Toole plays the girlfriend in 48 Hours, which I watched recently.
What?
Yep.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I need to revisit that.
Yeah, it was good. And then the Flash movie... That's the Ezra Miller Flash movie.
Yes.
Has cast their Supergirl, which I didn't know they were going to have.
Yep.
Sasha Calle.
Yep.
Who is... She's a soap opera actress. She's on Young and the Restless. And she
That's
is,
definitely a bit left field,
she's
but...
She's 26 years old. She's not done a lot of stuff. And possibly notable that she is Latina, which I think is, of course, has been taken well by the internet.
Yes. But, like... you know, we see the pushback, but we also see, like, amongst our circle of friends, who are generally probably, I'd say, progressive-leaning, a lot of love.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the foremost... I mean, to me, by the way, Flash and Supergirl is a bit of an odd combo.
It is weird, but, I mean, now they're like buddies in the TV show, so it kind of makes sense.
And it's not particularly weirder than anything DC does with their movies.
It's not like it's Jabba the Caveman. That'd be weird.
Who is that from?
That's from Metamorpho.
Metamorpho, yeah. Simon Stagg's Simon servant Stagg's, or whatever?
Bodyguard / servant, yes.
Yeah.
/ wants to marry his daughter.
Yep.
weird guy, Simon
Stagg. They really ought to be sure and bring that in exactly as is into the movies.
Yep. Well, Simon Stagg is in Wonder Woman 1984.
Yeah, he is.
And he was in the Arrowverse somewhere, too.
When you need an evil industrialist, Simon Stagg is there.
But when is Jabba's time to shine?
You know, that character could be used interestingly, I think.
Yeah.
What are we talking about? Oh, right. Supergirl. I have no thoughts on her other than in pictures. She has the qualities which I look for in Supergirl, which is she's pretty. and beyond that, I know nothing about her.
Yeah.
I assume that they saw something in her.
Yeah.
Just saying, where's our crypto? That's all I care about.
Crypto's too silly. They should never do crypto.
I feel like they
have him on the Titan show.
I hope he dies.
He would kill you in an instant. On the Titan show, he would definitely kill you.
Yeah, right? And I would drop the F-bomb while he did it.
Yeah. Ratings would go sky high.
Fuck, crypto's killing me.
last bit of news. Edgar Wright apparently is going to direct a Running Man reboot.
Yeah, that was a bit of an odd one. Now, Nick, you have read the original, was it Richard Bachman?
Yeah, it was
book,
Richard Bachman.
A.K.A. Stephen King writing as Richard Bachman.
Yep.
How different is it from the movie we got?
Wildly.
The Arnold Schwarzenegger one.
Wildly different.
Really? So that's not a dead-on adaptation of the book?
Oh, God, no. The guy's name. And that may be about it. And the concept.
It's still a dystopian future where people watch a violent game show.
I believe that is correct.
Okay.
But everything else,
so you're
wildly...
saying there was not heavily influenced by Richard Dawson and a bunch of wrestlers.
But here's the thing.
One Sub-Zero, now Plane Zero.
I love Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know if Running Man needs to be remade.
I don't know either.
It's still perfect.
Is it?
Well, it is a perfect Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Yes.
You know, we talked about this. Like, Schwarzenegger is his own brand in the 80s. Like, you know, Commando and a comedically serious R-rated action movies.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Edgar Wright, I've liked everything he's done. I really love Baby Driver. Really like Shaun of the Dead. I like all the Cornetto trilogy. I'm a fan of his stuff. And that is why I'm kind of excited for this. But to Nick's point...
Yep.
And some sort of years, Dave. We have seen Schwarzenegger and Verhoeven, who wasn't involved in this, but I think this is a Verhoeven-esque movie.
Yeah.
We have seen them try to do serious versions of these.
Yeah.
And they have flopped one by one. The RoboCop reboot was fine.
Yeah.
The Total Recall was boring.
Yeah.
They haven't redone Starship Troopers, but like this sort of larger-than-life 90s action movie thing that they did.
Right.
Like, there is no reason you couldn't do one that's more serious, but the sort of campy 80s version was the perfect one, and
yeah.
I'm not sure that there's that you can improve on it.
Right, because, well, like, Nick, would it be like, would the vibe be almost more like that kind of Hunger Games-ish kind of dystopia?
We're not going to get, like, Jesse Ventura or Yaphet Kotto.
But we shouldn't. Like,
here's the thing,
to do that.
Edgar Wright also does not direct boring movies.
That's true.
He is not a guy who I think will go in there just trying to, like, I'm going to make this grimdark. That's just not what he does.
He also doesn't direct anything that's, like, super drama or, like...
He hasn't adapted anything, has he? Wait, no, he did
Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything has got sort of pop to it.
Yeah.
So I think he's not going to go completely left field.
Yeah, the weird thing is, like, if you do make it kind of pop, well, then the original kind of... You cannot match that bombast.
Right, yeah.
You just can't.
Yeah.
Don't even try. but there's possibilities with Wright. I think we would all have to grant that.
I'm curious.
Nick, should I read the book?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay, just wondered.
All right. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about a bunch of movies and maybe a TV show or two. All right, so we have a bunch of movies and TV we've been watching.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about some of it. Not all of it, but some of it.
Okay.
First of all, let's talk about, Nick, you and I both watched... let's talk about the one we've been holding off on.
Okay.
HBO has gotten all of Warner Brothers' movies.
Yes.
Basically, they're not... Since they're releasing the theaters and HBO Max at the same time.
Yep.
And as a result, there's a bunch of, like movies coming out.
Yep, and you have, I believe... 31 days to watch them.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a window.
So yeah, they had Wonder Woman 84. That's gone.
Right. That was kind of the kickoff.
They're doing Little Things. I think has still got a few more, a week or so.
Yeah,
and that's what we're going to talk about.
And that's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
So this was very controversial amongst my friends. Some of my friends hated this movie. One of them is in this room.
Yes. And by the way, and it's a movie that just on the, you know, if you watch the trailer, you're like, this looks like a kind of a 90s serial killer thing, like Seven, Bone Collector, any of those kind of movies.
And that is 100% accurate because that's what this is.
Yes. It's starring like the same way that those kind of got A-list type actors like Morgan Freeman or whoever in it. This has
Bone Collector actually had Denzel Washington.
And this, oh, did he?
No. But Bone Collector was Morgan Freeman.
No, that's Along Came a Spider. That was the...
Oh my gosh.
Is that the same movie?
No.
I thought all those ones were the same movie.
Yeah, and isn't
Bone Collector was...
And what's the... Who's Ashley Judd's in all of them, right?
No, Angelina Jolie was in Bone Collector.
No, they're all Ashley Judd.
Ashley Judd was only in Long Canvas. No. Or not a lot. She wasn't even that. She was in Kiss the Girls.
See, even... Is the spider a sequel to Kiss the Girl?
Yes, and that's Alex Cross, which is
Morgan based on Freeman. A series of books, right?
Yeah.
All right.
So well, I've watched all these.
Is Ashley Judd in Little Things somewhere?
No.
Let's jump back to the Little Things. But yes. So I just want to say it has a fairly A-list cast, which has Denzel Washington, Rami Malek, and
Jared Leto.
Okay, it's mostly A-list.
I mean,
look, Jared Leto is actually he's good as playing a creepy dude in it.
Weirdly, I felt like I liked Jared Leto's performance more than anyone else.
If you want someone to convincingly play someone who's a serial killer, Jared Leto or possibly Armie Hammer would be your man.
And this is, by the way, do we know anything about the production of this? Because there is a the things that are sort of note about it are a kind of what it actually builds to.
Yeah.
That it has a kind of this Seven-esque arc, which I don't want to say too much about. Like, well, maybe we'll spoil it, but
yeah,
whatever. but there's a style to its dialogue. I noticed it has like kind of a lot of jargon and kind of like sort of fast-paced kind of dialogue that it's got a certain cleverness to it. I didn't love it, but it was like it was into itself.
I think what it felt like to me more than anything is a bit of True Detective. It was these sort
okay.
of a mismatched partners, a sort of a gory case, like a lurid kind of case, and a sort of beautifully shot.
Yeah.
One of the things that struck me about it is the ads all looked like Drive or one of those. The ads are all like darkness.
Yeah.
And there's this, like, this little bit of color. And I was like, I don't really want to watch something that's like a... Right now, in the middle of a pandemic, I don't want to watch this dark palette movie.
Yeah.
And, like, I thought it was going to be, like, Seven. But then when we watch it, it's all in, like, sun-dappled L.A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you know what? Actually, having this all out in the sun is made it more watchable to me.
So it's a little weird, because the director is John Lee Hancock, who has had an interesting career, but he made The Founder with Michael Keaton.
Okay.
Saving Mr. Banks with Tom Hanks. The Blind Side.
So he mostly does, like, inspirational
the
movies.
The Alamo and The Rookie.
So this is
the opposite
movie.
Of inspiration.
He also did The Highwaymen more recently, that Kevin Costner and... Is it Jeff Bridges? No, it wasn't Jeff Bridges.
Huh.
Let me just real quick say, like, how this movie starts, and then we'll say what the premise is. It has a pretty creepy opening with a woman on the road. Reminded me a little bit of the scene in Silence of the Lambs, American Girl scene. In this, she's driving along kind of like a sort of very deserted highway and gets in sort of an altercation and chased a little bit by another driver, eventually pulling over at like an empty convenience store to like hopefully find a phone or someplace she can go in. And she doesn't, and she ends up like hiding in the field nearby when the guy just and almost, you know, 30 seconds later pulls up behind her. It's a very tense sequence.
It is, yeah.
It's honestly the best scene of the movie.
arguably true. And she actually ends up surviving it.
Mm-hmm.
We then meet Denzel Washington, who's like this older guy working as, what is his?
She's a sheriff's deputy out in like this smaller town.
Yeah. Yes. But you kind of find out like what, he hasn't really risen through the ranks. He kind of like stagnated.
Right.
Well, no, he was, and he got demoted in a sense.
Right.
And got thrown to the side because of things.
Because of things.
Yeah, so he gets
sent to pick up some evidence.
Yeah, sent back to L.A.
Some
to pick
little
up
little things.
And he doesn't want to do it. Like, he doesn't want to go into the city.
No.
And then when they go there, like, you find out the other cops there, like, they don't really like him. But he winds up...
but he's also known to have, like, had a reputation as, like, a once, like, closed more cases than anybody else.
And so he winds up talking to this hotshot young detective, played by Rami Malek, who is working on this serial killer case.
Right, very public, lots of press conferences and all that.
And basically, sort of unwittingly gets drawn into it and becomes sort of friends with Rami Malek. And meets his family.
Well, there's some correlations to a case that basically has haunted
him. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And continues to haunt him.
He has an expression of like remorse and guilt over this case throughout the whole movie.
Yep.
And eventually we will find out like some more that will be elaborated upon in the ending.
I think the key for me here is the performances. Like, as a story, I don't think the story's great, to be honest. I don't. Even though I think I'm the one who liked this movie the most of the three of us,
yeah,
it's mostly just because this year's been kind of crap for movies, to be honest.
I Well, completely disagree with that. That's been really good, actually.
Nick, I know you are a person who sometimes, like, you will watch a lot of movies, and you'll be just like, oh, it's just a good solid serial killer movie, it's just a good solid horror movie. And I think, Randy, that was more or less where you were on this. You were like, this is a good solid serial killer
movie. That's where I landed. This was a good... It did what it set out to do. Now, whether what it set out to do was worthy of doing, I can't argue, but...
It's like an XZY level knockoff of Seven.
Yeah,
it definitely feels thematically similar to Seven, although its ultimate theme is a little bit different.
And also, honestly, while I like David Fincher, I feel like Seven was so notably lurid that I don't really like Seven.
I've gone back to Seven, and I actually have started to actively dislike it as well.
Yeah.
Even though I think Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman give
it's a stellar, it's a super trashy,
stellar movie. Performance
with very good scenes throughout, and like scenes that are hyper memorable. Like essentially, they work as horror,
yeah,
but they're also kind of like torture porn. Like like people are like very quick to condemn torture porn, but like Seven kind of kicked it off.
Yeah, it did.
But
and by the way, Seven I would say is more lurid than both the first Saw movie, the good one from James Wan, and even Hostel.
Yeah. And here's where it's going to... I might get into spoiler territory, but at least in Seven, I like the characters.
Yeah.
In Little Things, the characters are skeevy. All of them.
Yeah, they also sometimes... They don't have a lot of depth. They sort of somewhat feel like they're there to deliver the exposition.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Denzel Washington... I love Denzel Washington. I'll watch whatever movie he makes. I just feel he's kind of phoning it in here.
Oh, man, I thought Denzel Washington was great here.
I think he brings something to the character that isn't strongly there in the
it's
script.
Not on the page, right?
Yeah.
He has that sort of hangdog look the whole time. Do we want to talk about the ending, or
I don't think we really need to spoil
it. It's big enough. It's a notable enough sort of series of twists and turns.
I think the optics are awful.
I did not like the ending. I will say that right off the bat.
You know what,
like
Nick? I will say this, and I fully get where that approach is coming from.
Yep.
I feel like this was weirdly made from like a place of innocence on that, which you could then say is like privilege.
Because
if this movie, think about it, if this had happened in the 90s, we wouldn't have thought anything of it, right?
Yeah, I guess that's true. But
it would have only been about the theme of like this sort of attempt to alleviate guilt and angst. That's all we would have concentrated on. But yes, it's not the 90s.
In this day and age, we've become more and better, hopefully.
Yeah, it feels like an unproduced script got produced and like pretty slickly made.
Yeah,
and then I'm like, really?
Yeah.
That's you decided now?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's if you think you might like the movie, it might be worth a look.
Yeah,
but I don't think any of us are like, go out there and see this one.
No, but the
and
weird
Nick
thing
might be like, don't go out there and see this one.
The weird thing is it ranks pretty highly on my list of things I like. Like, honestly, between this and One Night in Miami, I much more enjoyed watching...
You sickened me.
I enjoyed watching this more.
Yeah.
Now, I will say, absolutely, One Night in Miami is a better movie.
No, I've had plenty of experiences like that. I mean, you know... I didn't...
Honestly, if you really think about it, they're not too dissimilar because there are people just talking. That's the entirety of both movies.
Yeah, it's a pretty chatty
there's
movie.
There's very little action.
There's less murder in One Night in Miami.
Right, there is less murder. But
I don't know, Joe Frazier, whoever it was, got murdered in the ring. What did y'all think? Like, there's some suspensefulish scenes there, but they are kind of like traditional ones. Scour the bad guy's apartment while he's away.
Yeah.
Oh no, he's coming back.
I think the only other scene that was good was when Denzel was trailing Jared Leto on the freeway.
Oh, I like that a lot.
And Jared Leto was playing with him essentially.
Yeah.
That was a really good, well shot, well thought out kind of.
I thought there were some interesting conversations with him and the medical examiner and stuff like that. I enjoyed some of that stuff.
I also really want to like Rami Malek. I never do in movies. I like him in Mr. Robot.
You know what
I've seen of him?
I think he, playing the, you know, very larger than life Freddie Mercury, I think he was at his best.
Yeah.
I don't think that was a great movie.
No.
But I do think it was like the strongest performance I've seen from him. I have not seen Mr. Robot.
Mr. Robot's good.
If only he was playing Freddie Mercury in this. Murder Police.
That would be a movie I'd watch.
Because we're having a good time, having a good time.
As he spouts that, just starts breaking into song on a crime scene.
Yeah, it's a
Freddie. Are we having a good time?
They're gonna do a. It's gonna be a cop rock revival, but with actual 80s and 90s musicians as the cops. Prince will be the head of their vice department.
Listen, I'd watch it in a heartbeat.
Look, I'm pitching it right now.
What is Sting?
Sting is sex crimes. Let's be honest.
This looks like another case of tantric ritual.
Jesus, Sting. We haven't even gotten into the apartment yet.
I have an erection.
I want this show so much. I really do.
All right. Moving on. Another movie that Nick and I differed on. This is one that just came out on Netflix. I Care a Lot. This is Rosamund Pike, most famous probably for Gone Girl.
Yep.
And
Peter Dinklage.
And the basic premise of this, I don't think we're giving too much away to say, basically she's a professional guardian, which means that basically she takes over the care of elderly people, and then she becomes like their legal guardian. And she basically is a scam artist. She puts them in a home, she sells all their stuff, and she basically takes all their money until they die. She's an awful, awful person.
I did not know... Call me, like, stupid or whatever, but the guardian thing, I did not know it was that, like, kind of a thing.
I didn't either, and I bet the people who actually do this for a living now are really not happy about this movie.
I'm glad that this movie exists, just for people
Real quick and clear, there are a lot of good guardians out there, right?
I assume yes.
Yeah.
That this is not like all guardians are people who are skeevy caretakers.
But the sweeping kind of... The person who was... You know, this happens to, which is Diane...
Is this made to scare old people?
Which is Diane Wiest.
Diane Wiest is the...
She's always a good actress.
She's amazing in this. Yeah. So, we open this with her at, like, she's basically has a hearing in front of a judge play Isaiah Whitlock Jr.
She's not even at the hearing.
And, it's a guy who, his mom, he tries to break into the senior center.
Oh, yes,
and then
you're
we see the trial... Right. And this guy is basically he's like a bearded guy in his 30s or 40s.
Yeah.
And he's basically seems a little bit off kilter, but basically he tried to break in to see his mom because he's like, she took her away. I can't even see her. She was fine. She doesn't need to be in a home. And Rosamund Pike and the judge are like, she's like, look, you know me, Your Honor. You know that this is sometimes is not good for the children to interact with their parents.
Yeah.
And basically she has managed to set this woman off. And it becomes very clear quickly that she's a psycho, that she's a sociopath.
Is this a let me ask? Is this a drama or is this a thriller?
It's
like
a
where
thriller.
You're meant to enjoy the cat and mouse game and the scary side of it.
What then happens is she finds along with a doctor that she's in on this with. Which by the way, there's a lot of women in this movie and they're all terrible.
Yeah,
like I want to say you know, congrats for being progressive and giving all these female lead roles, but they're all terrible people. And basically, the doctor is like, they put her onto what they call, she and her girlfriend, who is also her, like, her business partner.
Yeah, ex-police officer.
Oh, she's ex-cop, yeah. So she puts them onto what they call a cherry.
Okay.
A woman who has no family, is like a retired investment banker or something, so she has money.
Yeah, lots of money.
And the doctor is like, yeah, she's doing fine, but she is... She's like, I can nudge it into being an emergency hearing. So she goes for the judge, does not have the woman with her. This is Diane Wiest, and basically gets her committed.
Yeah.
To a care home, takes away her cell phone, and Diane Wiest is basically like, she's befuddled by all this. But she seems pretty feisty.
Yep.
And then we start seeing they do this thing. They like. They're repainting her home. They're selling everything off.
Assets.
And
gone.
A cab driver comes up. This sort of skeezy looking cab driver pulls up and he's like, yeah, I'm here to pick up Mrs. Peterson.
Yeah.
And the cop lady is like, oh, she doesn't live here anymore. And the guy's like, oh, well, this is bad. And then we find out that he works for this crime lord played by Peter Dinklage. And Dinklage is scary in this.
Yeah, he is.
He also, his hair is a character.
He has like a
man bun top knot and a beard. Like that beard deserves co-billing.
Yeah.
And he's like this scary mob guy. And it turns out this woman is a mother. He basically gave her a false identity.
Uh-huh.
So this is his mom. And she has just committed his mom. And so she basically runs up against this mobster who's like, yeah, and also she finds, like, diamonds in the.
Is this another where everybody is bad in this movie?
Yes, everybody's bad.
It's a Jackie Brown kind of everyone.
I gotcha. But you know, Jackie Brown had Jackie Brown and the bail bondsman guy.
What I thought we were getting, because I was really into this movie the first half, and it's the music is good. It reminds me a little bit of Uncut Gems in that sort of intensity.
Yeah,
it's very beautifully shot. Rosamund Pike is always amazing. Diane Weiss is amazing. And I thought we were going to get a terrible person has fucked with the wrong person. We're going to see revenge. And then when she actually interacts with him, she is like hard boiled. And then she gets out of it. And then it's about her escaping vengeance. And that is not the movie I wanted to watch. I did not want to watch a movie where someone who commits elder abuse succeeds upward. I did not want to see that movie.
Yeah.
And I feel like it really fucked up in that second half.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, you did say that we had opposite reactions for little things and this.
Yeah.
And I just, like, I knew the outcome of the movie.
Yeah.
I don't think it should shock anyone, but I was happy where it ended up. But yes, I agree. The optics are fascinating to me.
I kind of want to see this.
It's really well shot. You have to go in knowing the stuff she's doing. I mean, I can watch unpleasant narrators. Like, sure. I love Wolf of Wall Street, even though that's about total scumbags. Love Goodfellas. Something about this, because she is such a sociopath, and she knowingly is doing terrible
things. Did you like
things.
Gone Girl? Or did you ever see Gone Girl? I would say it's Gone Girl, but dialed down by like 3 or 4 notches.
If so Gone Girl was from the perspective of the woman who disappeared and tried to frame Ben Affleck for murder, and it was all about how she got away with it, it'd be Gone Girl.
We'll see. I mean, technically, that's what she did. Gone Girl.
But we have Ben Affleck as a sympathetic character, even though he's kind of
sympathetic. He wasn't super sympathetic.
I don't know. I feel like this is. It forgives a thing that I'm like, man, I did not want to see her succeed at things. Maybe it's because of the world we're in, and I'm tired of seeing corrupt people rise.
Well, I'm curious to see this because I'm like, I can't imagine any movie that would really want to forgive a person who abused older folks. So I want to see how it does this, and you know what manner it does this in, or gives her a redemptive arc, or quasi-redemptive, or whatever.
No, it's not redemptive. She just gets away with it.
Okay.
I turned to Kaylee and I was like, did Gillian Flynn write this?
It does feel like a Gillian Flynn movie, yes. And darker than Gillian Flynn, to me. This was so dark in its... And I guess maybe it's just because I assume... To some extent, it is because I assumed we were getting a certain movie.
Yeah.
I thought I was getting a revenge thriller, and I am not getting a revenge thriller. No.
It sounds like this has lots of juicy scenes.
It does.
Okay.
And Rosamund Pike is an amazing actress.
I might check it out. Sometimes I'm not always in the mood for the uncut gems of the world, but sometimes when I am, I find them enthralling.
And Dinklage plays the hell out of this.
Yeah, he's great.
And Diane Weiss is great in this. Like, everybody's good.
There's not a bad performance.
No. It just was reprehensible.
Fascinating. This is a dramatic podcast.
Let's talk about something a little sillier.
Okay.
And that is the Korean movie Space Sweepers.
This was
fun.
I know you were like, you really enjoyed it. I think on Letterboxd you gave it what? 4 stars?
No, like 3.5.
Was it? Yeah. I thought you gave it more than I did. Because
I think I liked it about as well as you did.
Okay.
The thing with this is, it's got the pacing of some Korean movies, which is a little long. It takes a little while to get going.
Yeah, I honestly think the last quarter of the movie is its strongest.
Oh, once it starts going, it's going. And one thing I'll say is that the action in this is great throughout.
Like, it is.
There's a lot of good fight scenes, and the special effects are fantastic. So basically, the premise of this is Earth got used up, and they start going out to this sort of philanthropist... Elon Musk type dude.
Yeah. Creates like a colony.
If I understand, this is takes place within the solar system, so it's not quite as sci-fi-y as Firefly was, like where
it's,
they're out
it's
like
exactly as sci-fi as Firefly is, but it's yeah, it's not it doesn't have all their
But
planets.
Like a little more realistic or
No.
Okay.
No,
it's
this
very
is,
hyper real.
It's very space operatic
okay.
in some way.
Got it.
There's no aliens or anything, but the vibe is definitely like I would say Verhoeven sci-fi, right?
Yeah,
like
a little bit.
Not quite as extreme, but
no.
But basically, there's these colonies, And the crew are, they sweep space, they go out and grab space junk.
Yeah, all that then, debris that would be floating around and hitting stuff.
Which they then sell.
And they are sort of like the premier, the take no prisoners
kind of...
What's the
name of their
ship? I can't remember.
It's like the, it's, there's some, basically they do an opening scene where there's like a bunch of these crews that are like, there's a Canadian ship.
Yeah.
And then like, there's a different ship from different, like, different worlds. And they are like grabbing this bits of debris. And these guys show up like pirates and steal it from all of them.
Yeah. It has, honestly, it has a very manga vibe to it, or an anime vibe.
And these guys are lovable losers. But then they happen upon, when they get this bit of debris, this little girl who seems to be, there's like, they find this little girl and they're like, oh, is she some rich person? She get away. And they find out that she's a robot and like a weapon of mass destruction.
Correct.
I've seen this kind of plot before where somebody's stealing something and they find out that like an innocent person is involved and they got to protect him.
But I also like, backing up slightly, I love the sort of, it's Korean, but they managed to throw in like English and a bunch like other languages. Yeah. Well, it's very just
is
kind
it in
of
Korean.
Some of the characters talk in Korean, but some of them are English. And
but it's not like the whole movie is subtitled.
No, but a bunch of it is.
And a bunch of it is. Yeah.
But their crew is like, they got their lead guy who's like this hotshot pilot who's trying to find the a daughter. It looks like
and
that they get in the backstory of him.
Yep.
They've got a the woman who's their captain. They've got the dude with the axe and the tattoos, who's like their engineer. And then they've got a robot.
The robot is amazing. The he throws harpoons at ships.
He harpoons ships.
Okay.
This is... The characters are all super larger than life, and I feel like they waited too long, but when they get to their backstory, I loved all their backstories. Yeah. But I also, like... I wasn't sure at that point. The backstory came from, like, propaganda, and I'm like... Is this actually the story? And I feel like that was a mistake. I would have liked to have known that was actually the backstory before they revealed it. I feel like there's a couple storytelling missteps here.
Yeah.
And I think it's just because it is sort of a, like you say, an anime manga type thing. And I'm not used to that type of storytelling.
It also would have really worked as a miniseries instead of... it was like a 2-hour and 10-minute movie.
It needed to be longer. It needed to be shorter.
But you could have done it.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. Say they, whether they tightened it up or not, is this the kind of thing that has room for a sequel?
No.
Okay.
No, it's done. It's a done-and-done
story. What you're saying. They all die in the end. No. That's what I've determined.
You could do something with these characters.
Okay.
Again.
I feel like the storytelling does get to... If you're someone...
Like, wasn't sure if, like, the setting was interesting enough that you could just, like, drop something somewhere in like, other places.
Maybe. I don't think so. I feel like this is a...
It's about these particular people.
It's an interesting world. I mean, I find it an interesting world, but I think they really do finish the story.
Yeah.
How are the
special effects and all that?
Really good. Really good. That's part of it, is that, like, the ship designs and the sets and the costumes, like... Really, really well
done. The CG is good as well.
If you are a person who nitpicks plots, if you're a person who wants your science fiction to be very science-y, you will not like this movie.
This is not The Expanse.
No, it is not The Expanse. but if you like the sort of wacky hijinks of Firefly, it does feel like it's a bit of all the different... Like, there's Firefly in there, and it's got...
Is there any of the blue-collar alien?
Yeah, aliens? A little bit of blue-collar alien stuff. It does
a little
feel,
bit of Cowboy Bebop.
Yes, yeah. It doesn't feel like super brand new to me. Like,
no.
I wasn't like, oh, I've never seen this before. But it's fun.
It felt like a really good mixtape.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I can't say that there are a whole lot of movies about there about like heisty stuff with people who are clear planetary debris out. It's not like that's a common thing we see in movies. Even though it's like might show up in our other sort of.
People who read
media.
A lot of manga or anime are like, oh no, that was, I read that last Tuesday.
Yeah.
I do remember that manga that came out years ago called Planets.
Yep.
That was like a more serious-ish take on that. Like, I remember that one chapter where the chick is trying to find a cigarette on the moon where, like, any sort of, anything that's flammable is, like, super dangerous because of the oxygen and all that stuff. And, like, what you're telling me, this is not even as realistic as Planets.
No.
Okay. Got it.
Nick,
cool. Well, that sounds fun.
Talk to me about Flora and Ulysses.
Okay, so this was I saw one of our other friends, or Yehudi Mikado, tweeted out about this.
Okay,
and he really enjoyed it, and I was like, "What the heck is this?" And I was like, "It's about a young girl and a squirrel, and it's apparently based on a young adult novel or something."
Okay,
but it's just a cute hour and 40-minute movie about a girl whose father is wanting to break into comics, mm-hmm. so he's created a bunch of superheroes himself. But, like, the opening crawl is
somehow this is not Squirrel Girl.
Correct. This is not Squirrel Girl. But the opening crawl, like, talks about Miss Marvel and Wolverine and Iron Man, and I'm like, okay, you've got my attention. And I will say, throughout the entire thing, they are kind of, like, talking about superheroes and comics, but while also telling a story about this young girl sort of having problems with their family, her mom and dad are sort of on the outs. The mom is played by Allison Hannigan. The father is played by Ben Schwartz, who apparently voiced Sonic.
Huh.
But he was also in Buffy. He was the person who killed Tara.
No, he was one of those guys.
Yeah, he was one of the trio. But he has come a long way. He is very funny. I did not know his comedic timing was actually as good as it is.
Just checking. There's, like, actually not, like, sort of, like, magically Disney-ish communication. This is, like, somebody's fascination with and connection with a actual squirrel?
Yes. The squirrel comes in because there's a squirrel that accidentally gets sucked up by a robotic vacuum cleaner that's on, like, a weird rampage.
Okay.
And gets superpowers.
Okay.
That's the weird kind of origin story. However,
I thought this was like a heartwarming thing where like a dying girl like bonds with a squirrel.
No, it's about a young girl bonding with the squirrel that can actually understand her.
Okay, so it is like a Disney crazy.
It is. It's a little Disney crazy. It goes into a lot of antics. There is a kind of a park ranger-ish character played by Danny Pudi, which he gets to ham it up like no one else. This is a dumb movie.
You know, by the way, this is a weird coincidence, but I actually got my powers from a vacuum, too.
Well, yeah. I know. Was it one of those little robo... No. No. Just an old school...
Yeah. It's an old Hoover.
Yeah, but it finds out that the squirrel can, like, communicate with her, and it ends up being able to fly, and yep. has a little bit of super strength. It does a superhero landing.
Yeah,
because
okay.
Because you have to.
Right.
It was charming.
Okay.
It was one of those that had enough in kind of like the world of comics that I thought was clever without being kind of like so gushy over it.
Yeah.
And I actually thought all the performances from the kid especially.
Where did this movie come from?
It's Disney Plus. It was a...
Disney original kind of thing?
Yeah. I don't know if this was meant for movie theaters or
feel
not.
Feel-good kind of movie?
But it's a good feel-good movie. It's a good way to spend an hour and 45 minutes.
If I want to feel great.
I mean, I would recommend it. It feels pretty good.
Okay, fair enough. You know, I watched... what was the holiday movie I watched? Jingle Bell?
Was the thing called? The one with...
Noel.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that one. That was a good
like
feel-good...
Anna Kendrick.
That was a good feel-good type movie.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. I watched on Netflix, Dolomite is My Name. I think this was another Netflix original.
Feel-good kind of movie.
It was a feel-good kind of movie, actually. This is Eddie Murphy... apparently his brother Charlie Murphy was originally going to play the part, and then he died.
No.
And Eddie Murphy took it over. And it is about the real-life Rudy Ray Moore, a sort of comedian, a struggling comedian musician who, well, we meet him in the beginning, he's very much doing the hustle type thing. He's like trying to get the DJ, played by Snoop, in a record store, to play his records. He is doing five-minute
comedy. It's like in the 1970s?
Yeah. He's doing five-minute comedy intros at like this music club. He's trying to get anything. And then he meets this sort of homeless guy who comes into the record store, and he goes down and talks to all the hobo camp, basically. And they're doing this sort of rapping storytelling, like the larger than life. And he basically takes that and creates his character Dolomite and plays him on stage. And this starts to become a thing. He makes records, and he basically becomes this like successful comedy icon, at which point he decides he wants to make a movie. And he basically winds up self-funding it, and he like puts up all his rights against the music, and if it goes wrong, he's basically going to be broke. And it is sort of biopic-ish, and it is about like this guy, and this is what happened. But Eddie Murphy really brings a sort of a charm to it. It's very likable. He has this sort of...
This is kind of a bit of a comeback thing for Eddie Murphy. It's not that he had like... He just wasn't doing any big, huge projects for a while.
He's great here. He like... You get to see him play dramatic and comedy.
Huh?
And Wesley Snipes is in it playing an actor who they bring in to basically direct and give it a little bit of respectability.
Yeah.
And he is just, he can't believe these dumbasses are making a movie. Like, it's so amateurish. There's, I forget who all else is. Titus from Kimmy Schmidt.
I do know who you're talking
about.
He's
in this. He's really good. Craig Robinson is in this. It's a fantastic movie about a little bit of story that I don't really know. I've never seen the Dolomite movies or anything.
I haven't either. They were in our, when I ran a video store, they were in our cult classics section.
It's very sort of uplifting and fun, and while they definitely challenge the character and they show the challenges he goes through, it definitely feels like a good guy done well kind of thing.
Okay. Titus Burgess,
that's it.
But I mean, it's also Craig Robinson, Keegan-Michael Key.
Yep, Keegan-Michael Key is in there playing their director. They're not their director, but he's the guy who writes the script. They find this guy who's a playwright.
Chris Rock.
Chris Rock has a moment in there. It's really fun. I enjoyed it quite a bit, and it's very heartfelt. I was expecting it to be either a riff on blaxploitation or like an outright comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not that. It is very much a funny drama kind of performance.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. It's one of my favorite things I've watched this year.
It's on my watch list.
It was on my watch list too, which is how I got to it. And then I also want to talk about, I started watching a game show called The Hustler, which I think is on ABC.
Okay.
This is Craig Ferguson, the,
late old night late show, talk show host.
Quirky Scotsman.
Yep.
Basically, this takes place in, it is mocked up to be his den. It's this big, fake library.
It could be his den.
It could be his den. There are five contestants, and the deal is that one of them is the hustler. The hustler, got questions about their life, and they have a series of 10 trivia questions based on the hustler's life. The hustler knows all the answers, but the other four people are all competing. So basically, these five people, one of whom is the hustler, they ask, they put up a thing on the, they put up a thing. It's like the hustler, for example, like the hustler was recruited by the Secret Service out of college.
Okay.
And then they'll ask a question of like, what, the question related to that was like, what crime was the Secret Service originally created to investigate? And they have a multiple choice. And then the group discusses, and they make a decision, and if they get it right, they get $10,000 in their pool. And they ask 10 questions, and they give 10 clues about the hustler. During this, the hustler eliminates, by they have a secret ballot, eliminates two people. So that by the end, there are three people left, two contestants and the hustler. And they have an amount of money that is either, they double the money at some point, so it's somewhere between like $40,000 and $120,000.
Okay.
And if the two people who are not the hustler can agree on who the hustler is, they split the money. If the hustler can convince just one of them that it's the other guy, the hustler gets all the money.
So this is a sort of bluffing show.
Yep.
But you, the audience, don't know.
The audience doesn't know, and Craig Ferguson doesn't know.
Uh-huh.
So he's basically, he opens it, and Craig Ferguson is so much of what makes this work, because he's having a great time. But he's like, he opens everyone asking, like, so what do you do? Who are you? Are you the hustler? And then when they're doing things, you know how when you play a bluffing game, you always like want to, like, part of the fun is to be like, well, that was a very, that's a pretty cagey answer for the guy.
Right, you suddenly start become to like an interrogator or something like
and
that.
And it's also kind of fun to poke fun at something like, oh, well, that sounds like what the hustler would say.
Yeah.
And he does that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know, so he can play right along. He's not giving away, not giving anything away.
What I have found when I play these games is I will joke about myself being the traitor in various board games, and then people are like, he said he joked about being the traitor a lot. I think he's the traitor. And I'm like, oops.
This is super fun. There's like 7 episodes on now. One of them was great because the people don't necessarily tell the truth about who they are. And one of them, where the guy who is not the hustler but is one of the guys who won, he's like, he had sold himself as like a farmer or something. At the end, he's like, yeah, I'm actually a private detective, so I knew how to look at it. It's super fun. The people they get to be the hustler are really quirky. Like, there's some funny little quirky things. Like, there's someone who's raising monarch butterflies in their house.
Oh, man.
Like,
okay.
And they're like, does this look like someone who raises monarch butterflies? So it's a lot of fun to watch it and be like, I think that guy's the hustler. And then inevitably, your first guess is eliminated, and you're like, oh, I was wrong. It was not the hustler. It's a super fun game show to watch, and I'm really enjoying it.
What's that run on, Randy?
I think it's ABC. I watched it on Hulu.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Nick, you watched... Is this an NBC show?
It is an NBC show.
This is the weirdest thing. Young Rock.
It's actually not that weird.
It's a weird premise.
It's just like a heightened biopic type of thing, yes. Right? Or flashbacks,
the
too?
The framing device is... the year is 2031... The Rock is on his sort of presidential tour, trying to become the president, and he's being interviewed by Randall Park, who has become a talk show host. That's the framing device, and he's being sort of very candid with how he grew up. And it sort of flashes back to him as a child, him as a college person who, during his time at... University of Miami, I believe, is where he was.
Sure.
And then him as sort of going into wrestling.
Right. Different actors.
Different actors playing him at different times.
It'd be amazing if he was playing all those roles.
But they, all of them exude his sort of...
Charisma. Or whatever, yeah.
But it also, you get to see, like, Andre the Giant and all of, like, the people, like, his... father dealt with, like, actually in the wrestling.
What did they do for him? CG?
No, they got an actor who looks very, very close. But it's just a lot of fun. I mean, there's just sort of the campiness of it, but also just to sort of get an insight of him growing up as the son of a wrestler who is, like, trying to sort of sell himself
in
kind
of the way. How much is this propaganda, Nick, and how much do you think is kind of, like,
that's what I want to know.
Well, I mean, he says he basically, like, stole, like, shoplifted stuff. It feels kind of true. I don't know if it's a ton of made
up. Like, it's
or not
dark in particular,
no.
I would guess, but, like, but there is a little bit of...
Yeah, it's like him dealing with, like, him needing a car as a teenager, like, and
is this
how
the
that
actual
happens?
Cleverest presidential thing where it seems like he's outing the bad stuff he's done, but it's just sanitized?
He's getting ahead of himself so he can run
I mean, you can certainly see it that way. I just see it as a very entertaining show that it's sort of...
Yeah, no, like, conceptually, this sounds like a fun idea.
It reminds me of, like, was it Young Chris or the Chris Rock show?
Everybody Hates Chris.
So...
But that was... That wasn't predicated on being Chris Rock. It was a, like, it was a story of a black family in the 70s.
Yeah.
This is such a weird, like, it feels like a promo piece. It's such a weird
thing.
It
does, but I'm
like,
a sucker.
I guess it either works or it doesn't.
Yeah,
like,
you're saying it works.
I think it works. I'm a sucker for Dwayne Johnson. I don't know why.
I think that's the thing. It's like, I like him in stuff, but I don't care what he was like as a kid.
But, I mean, growing up, I was in the wrestling... I liked wrestling at a certain time. Like when Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant.
Yeah, that was kind of me too. If you were a kid in the 80s at all, you kind of had to at some point.
Sort of seeing, but there's a scene where his father takes him to get sort of payment for being in in a thing, and a bunch of people are playing poker, and he, as a young kid, makes a joke about it all being fake. And how they react to that, It felt very real. Like, Andre the Giant walks up and literally picks him up. And he's like, is that fake? And Young Rock is like, no.
Yeah, I imagine he is a person who has lived a pretty larger-than-life life.
But you also see his mom and his dad and sort of their kind of relationship, and it's very interesting.
Is there any serious stuff like, his dad is a drinker, or, you know?
No, but he is... He's definitely a flawed person. You can definitely see it as he is not... Maybe he's like...
smoking the reefer?
No, but he's more addicted to sort of like the game. Like,
yeah.
And The Rock really just wanted to be a person and have money and, you know...
I want to be a person and have money.
Me too. Can I be a person and have money?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
And a talking squirrel.
And a talking squirrel.
Well, you know, I guess what he brought to wrestling was that kind of the trash talk and the drama was like his thing. Do they showcase any of that?
There's only been one episode. I think there's an episode that ends or that airs tonight, I think.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I'm also a sucker for Randall Park. I'll pretty much watch whatever he's in.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see. I have this feeling it's not going to hit with me, but I'm really curious to see because you liked it. And it seemed like the oddest thing to me. So.
But I mean, I only care about young Roddy Piper.
I think I may have watched all of The Rock's movies.
Yeah.
And they're not great, but he's always fun in them.
Did you watch the one that had the skyscraper in it?
Yes.
What's that called?
Skyscraper.
Just check.
I've seen Skyscraper.
AKA
seen...
Towering Inferno 2.
No, it was not bad. It was pretty bad.
Yeah.
But he was okay in it.
All right. I think we're going to bring Anna in because she just caught up on WandaVision and Mandalorian. So we're going to do a full-on spoiler run-through of Season 2 of The Mandalorian and WandaVision up through the most recent episode. So if you haven't seen those, the next segment is going to be full of spoilers.
Get out.
And if you have, the next season is going to be full of spoilers.
And I think we generally recommend WandaVision, so don't spoil yourself if you can help it.
Right. It is catch-up time because Anna
what?
Has caught up on all of The Mandalorian.
Yeah, all The Mandalorian.
And all the way caught up on the 7 episodes of WandaVision that have been aired?
Yeah. 7 episodes.
And we haven't checked back in on WandaVision since the very first, like, we talked about...
Episode 4,
right,
wasn't it?
Right, I think so. Did we talk about it through 4?
Yeah, because I know we talked about sort of the episode that sort of the turned.
Okay, all right. So we're gonna talk about all of WandaVision. So first, though, let's revisit Mandalorian. I can't remember if we've talked about all of it on the podcast or not, but I know we all love Season 2.
Yes. Yeah, and I also loved it. Just pretty much every single part of it felt like it was sort of tailored as, like, a love letter to fans who were big fans of, like, the what is now legacy canon.
Yeah.
Who sort of felt a little bit spurned by the current trilogy and some of the stuff they'd written in the meantime. This sort of felt like a love letter. So
oh, yeah, for sure.
It was dedicated to me specifically, including the bow on top, which was getting rid of Gina Carano.
Yeah, we talked about that a couple weeks ago, the Gina Carano getting fired. I think it loosened up a lot of things.
Yeah, it was actually why I was able to watch it, yeah. Really, which sucks, because, like, I mean, otherwise I would have loved this series.
Yeah, well, it's funny you mentioned that. It's like, her character is such a good character.
She is. It makes me mad. Like, it's so... Do you know how hard it is to make me, as a person who's attracted to women, really fucking hate a buff chick who cracks skulls and carries a shotgun? Like,
yeah,
fuck.
Yeah, Cara Dune should totally be, like, your favorite character.
Yeah, and she was until she was, like, a Nazi or whatever. Oh, jeez.
But, so, this, there were some pretty notable things, the Boba Fett of it all.
Oh, man, I was super into that. I at first I thought I was like, this is, like, gonna be... It's for other people, not
yeah.
me.
Mm-hmm.
But sort of his, like, grouchy old man, like, super badass, like...
He was finally the badass we were always promised.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, when he's beating the crap out of these stormtroopers with just, like, a regular stick.
It was not a regular stick, it was a gaffa stick.
Well, yeah, you're not wrong, but, like...
His, like, indigenous stuff, like, in the music.
Yeah.
And him have the tattoos and all that stuff, and I thought that was really cool.
It is really cool. Is that one of the weapons that the Tusken Raiders
use?
That's what I thought. And he's just, like, caving in skulls.
Oh, yeah, smashing stormtrooper armor.
I also, one of the things that I really liked is there are a lot of characters on the show who have, like, a very fluid style of fighting, which is to say, like, the action is all very fluid.
Yeah.
But one thing that I noticed is whenever he moved, everything was, like, very sudden, very jerky, very brutal.
Yeah.
So, like, it was not, like, an extended fight scene where he is, like, you know, trying to look for an angle. It's like, he already knows where the angle is, he's delivering the killing blow, and he is moving on.
What it reminds me of is Winter Soldier.
That is exactly it.
They get the impact, and it's like, yeah, this is a guy who knows how to take things out.
Yeah, yep. and he's not, like, fucking around, like,
no.
Whatever the main character, Amanda Lauren or whatever her name is.
Amanda Lauren, yes.
Not like him. He's sort of like, he's got, like, a good heart at his core.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, clearly Boba Fett is honorable, but he just does not give a shit about those stormtroopers or their families.
Nope. Also, I loved what's her name that is played by Melinda May. Who's I'm like
oh the sniper chick.
Yeah,
ah, crap.
It's not Krennic because that's the but it's something like that. Fennec, something like that.
Fennec, yeah.
She's great, and I love that she came back.
I was very pleased because that was like one of my because I think she showed up in one of the early episodes of The Mandalorian.
She's in like episode 5 or 6. Yeah.
Yeah, and one of my big criticisms of the first season as I was watching it was I was like, why do they keep killing off or writing the women away? Well, I would like to see more ladies.
Didn't they show? But she was shown like tied up or something, right?
Yeah. Wasn't she like gut shot?
Yeah, the bad bounty hunter shot her. Yeah.
Yes, and then at the very end you see somebody come up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's fair.
But we thought he was discovering the body. Turns out not.
Yeah.
The other thing was, this season, like, really, really made me super happy, because I think there was, like, at least one whole episode where the bulk of it was just, like, the two Mandalorian ladies, Bo-Katan, and the other one whose name I don't remember.
Yeah.
Cara Dune, who I guess is whatever.
Yeah.
Just, like, sort of beating ass.
Yeah.
Similarly, the Ahsoka Tano episode.
Yes.
Which was, like, a very clear homage to, like, the samurai roots of Star Wars,
yep.
or the samurai film roots of Star Wars, which was super cool, and also juxtaposed against the, like, Western-style shootout between the big bad mercenary and the Mandalorian.
Yeah, like Michael Biehn, who was great.
Yeah. Super, super good, especially to see with all the strong, like, narrative and thematic parallels between those two genres, like, sort of seeing them, like, side by side.
Yeah.
Was very, very cool.
I did not realize that was Michael Biehn at the first. I
actually looked familiar, and then I looked at the trailer or the IMDb, and I was like, oh, that's who that is.
Yep. Yeah. And he was, like, so sleazy and terrifying,
too. Yeah. Yep. And then we get the redemption of Space Boston.
Yeah. I was up until, like, maybe they get into the bar scene, I was just like, fuck this guy. He's such an asshole.
He was a likable asshole.
Bill Burr,
you know?
Mayfield is who we're talking, like, about.
Funny.
Yeah.
But he's like, you take off your hat sometimes and I betray my friends because I have no respect for life. We're the same, Mandalorian. And it's like, no, there are magnitudes, my friend.
But when you get to the reason why he is who he is, I was like, oh, well, I actually do like this guy.
Yeah. he went from being sort of just like a grumpy pisspot to, like, the kind of character that I actually like to play.
Yeah.
Which is to say, somebody who is kind of an idealist who's just sort of, like, been scuffed and had their ass beaten.
But so I will say, I've never seen a television show get to sort of the heights of the tension that was in Inglourious Bastards.
Game. Yeah.
And I was just like, oh.
Yes, things are going to go bad. Yeah.
People are going to die here.
The facial journey that he goes through made me, like, so stoked. I could not believe that, like, I was like, is that Bill Burr still? Like, he, like, looks so, like, intense. And then, like, he just sort of, like, twists into rage and just blows the guy away. And I was like, that was really cathartic.
And then we get the big face-off with the Moff.
And
the Mandalorian
cool.
is now the head of the Mandalorians.
Yeah, I was going to say, I love that even as he is getting his ass beat, Moff Gideon still manages to be the biggest asshole
by
fucking over Bo-Katan again.
Yep.
Which is super awesome. I was actually hella disappointed when, at the end of the episode, she's like, help me get the Darksaber, we're gonna go retake Mandalorian, as the person who's been playing a Mandalorian in, like, Star Wars games for, like, fucking 15 years. I was like, yes, do it, go. And then he's like, actually, I gotta go to a backwater space town and hang out with an old man and a weird lady. And I was like, no, that's the main story quest. Get back in
there. That's what I love. The Mandalorian is never about the main story.
Yeah, he does not
give a fuck.
The
Mandalorian is all side story.
Yeah. which is truly delightful, because it's like, yeah, I see that that's on fire, and I see that, like, there's some big crazy shit going on. But this baby wants to play catch, so...
Yeah, there's this whole thing of, like, this ancient order of warriors is trying to regain their home planet, and this other ancient of warriors is coming back and training people, and this empire has fallen, and this new republic is rising, and the Mandalorian's like, I gotta get this kid.
Yeah.
So I gotta get him to a thing.
He's so fucking cute. Have you seen how much merch this guy sells?
So, I do love that. I love that they're kind of staying with it.
What did you think of the Luke Skywalker of it all?
I know I've already made this joke to at least two people, but I don't think I've made it to you, so please laugh accordingly. but please don't give your child to Luke. We already know he gets everyone killed. What are you doing?
I thought they did such a great job making Luke a badass, though.
They really did, because, like, I don't know, Lucas's directing, like, never really showed Luke be powerful, because he was, like, the scrub.
The closest we got was when he goes into Jabba's palace and just kind of casually chokes out a Gamorrean guard.
Yeah.
And is, like, super confident.
He does kill a Rancor.
He does kill a Rancor,
but, like, it's a tough fight for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these guys that, like, one of them was, like, battering the shit out of our whole ragtag group of badasses, and then Luke comes in and he's just like, yeah, I give zero fucks.
Yeah. If people have compared it to the Rogue One scene with Darth Vader. Yeah. This is the good guy version of that.
And that's what I want. I mean, the Darth Vader scene is scary and all, but I would much rather see fascists get their skulls caved in with sticks.
Yes.
Did you hear the fan theory, because R2 kind of goes a little crazy when he sees Grogu?
Uh-huh.
That R2 was the one who got him out of the youngling.
That's the theory.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. That's delightful.
It is.
I don't know what next season looks like, because obviously they're not going to just go away from Grogu. He's too popular to just quit.
I think they will for a little while.
I think they will.
You think?
I think they're going to do the Mandalorian Wars. I think they're going to take back Mandalore.
All right,
which I think will be fucking dope.
Yeah. Because I think you're going to have to show the Mandalorian sort of come to grips that the sort of Mandalorian edicts that he grew up with are sort of weird.
He was raised space Mormon.
A little bit.
Actually loved that explanation for like the division in canon.
Yes.
In fact, they've done like a lot of stuff that like really like, I don't know, just even referencing it casually and sort of bringing it back into the lexicon, mm-hmm. like the war with the Jedi and all that jazz. And what was the other thing? Oh crap. Yeah, I mean, sort of the bit where he's like, they're like, yeah, you're a radical zealot. That's why you never take your helmet off. Yeah. You just want to bring back the old ways, and referencing like the Mandalore and like all of that jazz.
Yeah.
Super cool. Made me very stoked. Similarly, I think Boba Fett mentions that his father fought in the Mandalorian Civil War.
Yeah.
Which is like super cool too. I don't know. I'm just really stoked that the Mandalorians are like finally getting their day on the silver screen.
You did watch the after credits.
Oh, I guess I didn't. I'm gonna have to go watch it.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Look, it was 4 a.m. and I needed to be here at work today. Yeah. So like the moment the credits
rolled, like 30 seconds that was gonna just blow your mind.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm gonna go home and have my mind blown, apparently.
Yeah, that's man, the post credits, which is another spinoff.
Yeah,
it's another Star Wars show.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So super excited about that.
Oh jeez.
But as long as we get more Katie Sackhoff in the next season,
she's great.
She's so good.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay, so let's divert over and talk about WandaVision,
Disney Plus's other hit show.
Yep. I was a doubter, and I remain. Those first two episodes were too slow and self-indulgent.
First three episodes.
I agree.
The third one, at least they started to get into it. I honestly feel like 1 through 3 should have been one long episode, and they should have done the color swap halfway through, and the final part of episode 1 should have been Monica getting ejected.
I see what this is. You just don't like black and white things.
I don't like black and white things.
And I
also don't like things that were made in the '50s and the '60s. So that's true.
But you like superheroes, and they have usually pretty black and white morality.
I like black and white morality.
But you don't like black and white television.
Yes.
What about black and white morality in black and white television?
I don't know. I wouldn't know. I don't like black and white television.
Okay, that's fair.
What did you think?
I like black and white cookies.
Is this Randy's equivalent of not liking dumb Silver Age costumes?
This is my not liking Buccaneer boots.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, I'm delighted now because I'm not the only one who's a hater. So I definitely agree with Randy. I thought that the first couple episodes were just super slow, and it really like kicked up for me not when she was ejected from the warp or whatever the hell they call it.
The hex.
Sure. That's definitely the same exact thing.
That's what Scarlet Witch does. She hexes stuff.
Yeah, she hexes stuff. But, like, I'm sitting here thinking of, like, Warhammer. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's the warp or whatever. It's all magic stuff. But anyhow, they started with, like, the snap with, like, Monica Rambeau.
Yeah,
like,
episode
trying
four.
To get to her
yeah,
mom.
Episode
yeah, four. Episode
four,
like, was the big episode.
That was where I started caring about it.
Yeah.
But where I started liking it was when, in I believe the very next episode, where they reintroduced Quicksilver, but not the Quicksilver from the MCU that I hated and I thought was boring, but the delightful one from Days of Future Past, which I still have an immense fondness for.
Yeah, yeah.
That's Evan Peters.
Yeah.
But that's not Quicksilver.
It has to be. If they don't let him be Quicksilver, I'm gonna cry.
I don't think he's Quicksilver either.
My fan theory is weird, and Rainey keeps saying I'm crazy, but I still will hold to it that is Mephisto.
Nick thinks it's Mephisto. I don't think Mephisto's gonna be involved, but also, I thought it was gonna be Shield, not Sword, and I didn't think it was gonna be Agatha, so I've been wrong twice.
Yeah, that's fair.
Also, Catherine Hahn is amazing, and
oh
she's
my god,
delightful.
I love Catherine Hahn.
She's so good.
I always love Catherine Hahn, and that song that they gave her,
very good.
So perfect.
Yep.
But by the way, I still think that's a fake out.
I think it's a fake out too.
I don't think she's fully behind everything.
That said, if they are going to introduce the X-Men, they do now have access to stuff like Limbo.
Yeah.
This could be, rather than, and maybe I talked to you about this, but rather than being Mephisto or like one of those hell types, it could be someone from Limbo fucking with things.
Well, the book that they kind of zoomed in on very briefly
might
be the Darkhold, which is written by, if they follow Marvel continuity, it was written by Chthon,
who in Marvel continuity did possess the Wanda for her power.
Yeah,
interesting.
So if they're going, and they have been drawing from the comics for a lot of this,
and
so,
they are doing sort of Nexus beings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is leading to some interesting possibilities.
Yeah. So there's definitely some big twists coming. I also love all the performances. I love Kat Dennings as Darcy.
Oh, she's so good.
As it turns out, I like what they're doing with the sitcom stuff. They just need to get out into the place of sitcoms I liked.
Yeah.
Like the Modern Family riff, where it was like, I wanted more of a blend. And that's what they finally got to, the blend of like sitcom and not sitcom.
Yeah.
And the Modern Family thing, which also has a bit of a nod in that Kat Dennings was in Two Broke Girls, and she's like playing a very Two Broke Girls kind of version of her
character.
She's
like
here.
Basically playing that character.
I don't know. She was playing very Julie Bowen kind of from.
No,
Modern
no.
Film.
Wanda was.
Oh, yeah.
But
Wanda
Kat Dennings was playing.
Yes,
yeah,
that's true.
With her comment, like, fine, I'll go out with you, but I'm buying the lobster.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, that's
yeah.
just like,
yes,
I could
was.
See them saying that on her sick.
I liked all the nods, and I think that was one of the things I kind of appreciated. I just wish they had let us in on it a little earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that. Though for me, my sitcom fondness was the Malcolm in the Middle episode.
That was great.
Where Billy and Tommy are like the two younger kids, or Billy's Malcolm, Tommy's the younger one, and then Quicksilver's like the fuck up older brother
yeah,
who like goes
yeah.
to jail and ends up in the army.
Yeah.
Really, really, really thought that was a good, fun homage.
I don't know where they're going to land on all this, because now they've introduced Tommy and Billy, they've made the nods to Wiccan and Speed.
They're doing a Young Avengers.
The Avengers
Quicksilver. They've got Vision. Like, I don't know where all this lands, because Vision, I'm not sure Vision's alive.
Yeah, I don't, because, so, he couldn't leave the Hex.
Yeah.
Which means either that he is tied to it because she created, like, brought him back to life inside of it.
Right.
Or that I guess she just really doesn't want him to leave, because if this is Wanda's perfect world,
yeah.
her perfect world has to exist with him in it, and therefore he's, like, intrinsically tied.
Well, it also sounds like that Sword was trying to recreate Vision and do something to his body, which might bring... What was that time period when he was, like, the white Vision?
That was John Burns. And
that was John Burns.
They referenced that here. When they show him, like, disassembled the sword, that was very similar to when Wanda stole him from from S.H.I.E.L.D. or whoever had him in the...
Yeah.
It's some other organization in the comics. But, yeah, they've made lots of nods. Like, clearly, they read through the comics. Like, the Vision Marvel or the Vision and Wanda... A Vision and Scarlet Witch miniseries takes place in New Jersey.
Yep.
Had Glamour and Illusion, which is a nod in episode 2.
Mm-hmm.
All the Avengers West Coast stuff is being nodded to here. Like, they definitely are referencing all the comics, which is what makes me think the Chthon thing is not that crazy.
No, it's not. Also, we get Monica Rambeau. We get her basically the creation of what is essentially going to be Photon.
Yep.
Yeah. So I just loved, it was like a fun little Easter egg that her spacesuit was like the black and white and silver,
yes.
like her costume.
Yep.
Well, when she
good.
Was being split apart into the spectrum,
yeah.
you could see various versions, and there was one that looked like a superhero suit.
Yeah.
Like straight up superhero
yeah.
suit. And it was fun to see hear Carol Danvers
yep.
have some lines in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome seeing her eyes glow and seeing her ability to see through different spectrums.
The thing is, like, Monica Rambeau is one of my favorite characters,
yeah.
and I loved her from the outset when they introduced her in episode 4, where I was like, okay, I like this version of her who was basically a sword pilot.
Yeah.
And I was cool with her at that, and then they gave her the powers, and now they have her being, like, Wanda's ally, and I love the way they're doing her.
I'm really stoked with
and
that.
And she's going to be in the Captain Marvel 2 movie, so
hell yeah.
I'm super excited. So, for everybody else... Everybody's like, oh, it's a great Wanda show or Vision show or Quicksilver. No, no, this is a Monica Rambeau show.
Yeah.
But that being said, Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany are doing
fantastic.
Amazing
they're
work.
They're so good.
Yeah.
They are getting to flesh out characters that were basically just superficial characters
yeah.
in the movies.
Yeah.
They got a few scenes, which were great,
mm-hmm.
but this is expanding on the relationship that they have.
Yep.
Which is really important, because I kind of didn't really buy it in the movies.
Well, we never got to see it.
Yeah, we never got to see
it.
It
just sort
we
of
just
happened
had to accept
screen.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And apparently we're also, I know Kevin Feige has said that we're going to know why she's calling or going to be called the Scarlet Witch.
Right.
Okay.
So, because right. no one's ever, she doesn't have a code name.
Yeah, she doesn't. Yeah. And they do clown on that.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
pretty early on. The thing that I am really, really hoping for, and this is what I would love to see from perhaps not the end of this, but sort of like consequences set up because of this down the line, is if not the opposite of M-Day and creating mutants around the world, I would really like to see the reality where Quicksilver exists, like, sort of crash into this one.
You did watch the mid-credit stinger on this, the last episode.
Man, I'm just fucking on these things all over the place.
In fairness, there are 20 minutes of credits with every episode, so I can understand what you're
saying. Yeah, I just sort of like, fuck it.
But, but I will say, this one had a mid-credits.
Okay.
And it's an important one.
Yeah. I will look for that. Does it confirm my theory?
No.
No.
All right, well, I don't care about it anymore.
It leads more to my theory.
we'll see. I have this feeling they're not going to introduce the mutants, just because they haven't announced anything to do with X-Men yet.
But this is baby steps. This is introducing the idea of multi-dimensions.
Yeah.
And there are some ideas that are...
So, I happen to find a video of Kevin Feige doing his presentation from, like, November.
Uh-huh.
Which had all the trailers and that kind of thing. And one of the things he mentions... He does the thing for... He talks about WandaVision. They talk about Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. And he's like, Elizabeth Olsen is in this. It's gonna spin out of WandaVision. And he also said, when he goes and talks about Spider-Man, that some of that stuff is set up in Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
So they are 100% doing the Spider-Verse thing. They're going to do the multiverse stuff. And
super
if they're
delightful.
So I don't see how they don't bring in the X-Men stuff a little bit.
Well, and also the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Well,
everybody has that... Everyone wants to know who the aerospace engineer was. And I don't think it was the Major, because I think she said it was a guy.
Yeah, I honestly think it's not Reed. I actually think it's Blue Marvel.
That'd be weird.
But he was on the Ultimates with her.
Yeah.
I think they have a.
They probably won't be. He probably won't be as superpowered.
No, I would not imagine.
After having listened to Jay and Miles for as much as I have, the only thing that comes to mind when you mention aerospace engineer is Super Doctor Astronaut Peter Corbeau.
I'm pretty sure it's not Peter Corbeau.
But it's Peter Corbeau in my heart.
Well, in my brain, I wanted it to be Victor Von Doom.
I mean, that would be pretty cool. But
everyone else I think was saying Reed Richards.
Reed Richards, yeah.
And it was kind of a nod, like John Krasinski. They were doing sort of an Office kind of sitcom vibey thing. And
yeah,
it was a nice parallel, but I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
That said, hear me out. Usually, what we hear are like movie titles, right?
Yeah.
And then we hear casting news. If they were going to use a lot of the stuff that was already set up in Days of Future Past and X-Men First Class, they wouldn't really have to cast stuff. They acquired those properties. And if they were just going to include the X-Men in other stories rather than delve into the X-Men proper, like, via movies, we wouldn't hear about anything, right?
They're not going to do X-Men.
Look, please, let me have the X-Men.
I think the multiverse, that explanation works, that somebody grabbed that kind of look for Quicksilver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the idea that the multiverse and those X-Men continuities exist within the multiverse makes sense.
Yeah. And that she just sort of like grabbed the wrong one because she stretched thin.
But it wasn't her.
Wanda didn't do it.
Maybe it was either Agatha or someone else.
Oh, that's right, because I forgot. So, well, she did be like, wow, that wasn't me. But, like, she was, like, lying through her teeth for, like, the whole fucking
episode. Right, and that's the thing.
We
assumed that she was her, but it wasn't. Clearly, it actually wasn't her.
Yeah. In that case, very good MacGuffin, or whatever the term is.
Yeah. I still say there's one more villain to be found. Who that person is, who knows?
It's Plant Man.
No, it's a surprise from completely, not just out of left field, but a whole different ballpark. It's Animal Vegetable Mineral Man. He has finished terrorizing the Doom Patrol, and now he's
I'm just
here.
Wanting the Young Avengers movie that they're obviously working towards.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're going to have... We know Cassie is in Ant-Man 3.
Kate.
We know that Kate is in Hawkeye.
We know
we've got this.
America Chavez, yeah.
And if in Winter Soldier and...
All we're missing is Patriot. If Elijah comes in and I will be 100%... Yeah, they're doing Young Avengers.
I can't imagine they're not doing Young Avengers.
And then the idea that... Kang is going to be an Ant-Man,
yeah.
which is Iron supposed Lad. To be Iron Lad from as a young kid.
Yep.
Super cool.
They have to.
Yeah, they could easily be building to Young Avengers, and they should be.
They should. That would be amazing.
But they also, they may change it up. Like, if they do a Young Avengers, they may mix it with Champions a little bit and throw in, like, Miss Marvel.
Yeah, that's true.
Other characters, so we'll see.
Look, I would really like Marvel Boy with his psychedelic spit and his exploding fingernails.
I would not count on that one.
I know. But I don't know.
We're getting Chthon.
No, we're not. Although, I think we're alive. If I were to put
odds... But the Darkhold makes sense because we know Blade is coming.
I would be more likely to say we're going to get Chthon than to get Mephisto at this point.
Okay.
I think Mephisto's a red herring.
But Randy, you've been wrong.
Multiple times.
Yeah,
but
so...
we know, the Darkhold makes so much sense.
It does.
Because we know Blade is coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, if this is the Randy's wrong cast, then I think I have to believe Nick's theory, even though I understand literally none of it.
I got often, Sword right.
It often is Randy's fair. Wrong cast. Alright, that'll wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.